This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. U.S. House and Senate negotiators gave a big boost to legislation that could jumpstart new work on locks modernization on the Upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. The bill contains key reforms to add funding and speed construction of key inland waterways projects, including federalizing the over-budget Olmsted project between Illinois and Kentucky. Michael Tuohy heads the industry's Waterways Council.
Because the tremendous $3 billion cost overrun at Olmsted, that has basically shut down any other of the authorized projects from being implemented and literally shut down two that are under construction.
The bill makes it harder to use the Inland Waterways Trust Fund for operations and maintenance, prioritizes capital projects based on risk of failure and benefit, and makes reforms to boost on-time, on-budget performance. Still not included, but key, a 6 to 9 cent hike in the diesel fuel user fee.
Every penny of the diesel tax yields about $4.2 million for the Inland Waterway Trust Fund. So a 9 cent, for example, increase as recommended by Senator Casey would add around $40 million annually to the program, which is matched dollar for dollar.
Adding $80 million to the $105 million freed up from Olmsted, bringing possible new annual locks funding to $185 million, key to replacing ancient locks in the heartland.
There's enough money available to begin the advanced engineering and design work on the Upper Miss, which is called the NESS program. There's enough money to undertake efficient construction at Lower Mon 234. There's enough money available to begin Chickamauga and Kentucky.
But Tuohy concedes progress will hinge largely on getting Congress to approve the industry and grower-backed user-free hike after WERDA is passed. He says that will take a moving tax bill, possibly a bill to renew the federal motor fuels tax and boost the dwindling Highway Trust Fund, something that could happen this summer as highway dollars to the states are curtailed. Farmers may want to start keeping an even more watchful eye over their fields. According to Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager, Palmer amaranth has begun to emerge. Writing on a University of Illinois website, Hager said he found the weed in a field west of Kankakee on May 8th and then again on the 15th. This time, the largest Palmer amaranth plants were approximately 2 inches tall with 6 to 8 true leaves. Extension weed scientists in Iowa and Ohio have reported finding emerged Palmer amaranth plants in their respective states as well. They are all aware completing corn and soybean planting will assume top priority when field conditions are again suitable. However, each urges farmers not to overlook the need to control emerged Palmer amaranth in fields already planted. The return of warm air temperatures coupled with ample soil moisture will help emerged Palmer amaranth plants grow very rapidly. Hager, as a reminder, says post-emergence herbicides should be applied before Palmer amaranth plants are taller than 4 inches. It is not advisable to delay the application of post-emergence herbicides until additional Palmer amaranth plants emerge. Delayed application of post-emergence herbicides, whether by choice or due to adverse weather conditions, can lead to disastrous outcomes, he says. Palmer amaranth continues to germinate through much of the growing season, making it altogether likely that additional Palmer amaranth plants will emerge following the initial post-emergence herbicide application. If this is the case, Hager still thinks a farmer should consider including a soil residual herbicide with the post-emergence herbicide to control additional Palmer amaranth emergence and allow the crop to gain a competitive advantage over later emerging weeds. To read more from Aaron Hager on Palmer amaranth, its emergence, and the control of it, you can visit the Bulletin website. The address is bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. That's all for part one of this afternoon's Farm Show. Stay tuned for part two, coming up after this. Anyone who owns a CDL may want to pay close attention to a deadline coming up this week. As of this Wednesday, May 21st, any DOT physicals must be done by a DOT-registered practitioner. President of the Midwest Truckers Association, Don Schaefer, has more.
This has been talked about for the last 2 years, that this deadline, May 21, is a date that anybody after that date that goes to get a DOT physical, and there's 400,000 of them here in the state of Illinois, anyone who goes to get a new medical card and a DOT physical has to use a medical doctor, nurse practitioner, or doctor of osteopathy, chiropractor, who they use to have that physical done, has to be done by someone who's certified and on this national registry. How do I know if my doctor's on there? You go to www.fmcsa.dot.gov, and that will take you to where the medical registry is. Go in there, you type in your zip code or whatever, and it'll tell you all the doctors within 25, 50 mile radius, whatever you want to put in there, that are certified to do DOT physicals. Now, here's the hook, though. The problem is that there aren't that many doctors that are on this list. In the last month or so, a lot more doctors have jumped on, but there still aren't a lot there. So you want to double check if your physical comes due anytime after Wednesday to check to make sure that your doctor, chiropractor, practitioner is on that list to get that DOT physical done.
Because that could kind of create a problem. People in our listening area, for example, may have to travel quite a ways to get a physical if their doctor is not on the registry.
And I think there's, you know, if you look at it, it may mean traveling to Springfield, may mean traveling to Belleville, Alton. I mean, there are, in the Litchfield area, there are a few, but not many. And you may end up going to Decatur, Springfield, Champaign, what have you, if you can't get it. Because the problem is, for a lot of these, is that they do DOT physicals, but it's not their whole practice. So they can only schedule so many at a time. Well, if you got all these people come running in, say, I need a DOT physical today, the doctor may come back and say, well, I can't see you until next week. Then you're going to be, you're going to have to go shopping to try to find a doctor who will do it. And, you know, the DOT physical itself, you know, it takes some time. It takes filling out paperwork and everything. But the drivers have to have it. The DOT physical is a requirement, just like the CDL. Can't drive without a proper physical and a certified physical. And that just shows that you're medically qualified to drive.
So in order for it to be a DOT physical after Wednesday, it needs to be done by a registered practitioner. Otherwise, it's just a physical.
That's right. That's correct.
Also coming up soon, Schaefer said he expects to see a final rule on covered farm vehicle legislation.
Covered farm vehicles. This is an issue that's been out there for a while in terms of reaction to the last transportation bill. Exemptions, the agriculture exemptions that were built into this legislation, the federal legislation, had to be approved by the state of Illinois. In Illinois, what they're doing is trying to define what is a covered farm vehicle. And that's easy to do, you know, on certain vehicles. But then you've got this gray area. You've got pickup trucks that are under 12,000 pounds. And they have no way of designating it right now. What they're going to do is that they're going to issue a sticker that basically will be a CFV exemption, and they'll charge $10 for it. So that way you can hook it up, you can hook your trailers. If the vehicle is being used for farm purposes, then it's exempt from a lot of the requirements of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. And the ag exemptions that are under there will then trickle down all the way down to these covered farm vehicles. Right now, you know, the ag exemption pretty much is those over 26,000. Farmers, truckers, they understand that, what that is. But this will also cover, you know, pickup trucks, dualies, those vehicles also from 12 to 26,000. And that's a big issue, I mean, for a lot of people because of the fact that the exemption's there, but they can't use it until this bill passes the General Assembly.
Well, hopefully it passes, or at least that there's a decision made so people can know for sure if their vehicle can be considered a covered farm vehicle.
Yeah, this bill passed out of the Senate. Senator Toy Hutchison carried the bill and passed out of the Senate. A lot of discussion because of the fact that the safety, police, trucking interest, ag interest, government officials, Secretary of State, state police, all these all had to weigh in on this. And I mean, it basically was one of those that had a lot of luggage going with it. Bill passed out of the Senate and was voted out of the House Transportation Committee last week. So we'll see it moving pretty quick and should be out of the General Assembly by the time they adjourn in about 2 weeks.
Again, that was President of the Midwest Truckers Association, Don Schaefer. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.